So last time we were in number six, and what we spent most of our time with was something called a Nazirite vow. God said to Moses, any man or woman that wants to have a special vow of a Nazirite, that's open to them, and God lays out some boundaries for what will be a part of their life during the time they would do a special vow like this, a time when they would stop and focus on who God is and what he's doing and set some of their energies aside for that. Some of what God asked them to do, told them to do, was to abstain from wine and strong drink, to have nothing from that was a product of the grapevine. No razor was to touch their head, so they wouldn't be cutting their hair or that kind of a thing. And they were to have no contact with dead people, dead bodies, even those of close relations. If they would have a death in the family, a parent or a sibling, it would be beyond their practice to be able to go and to interact in a funeral type setting. If something happened beyond their control, someone died in their presence, became unclean in some way, they would spend 7 days seeing their cleanliness restored. That was the normal practice of contact with an unclean body, with a dead body. On the eighth day, they would bring a sacrifice for cleansing, two turtle doves or two pigeons, and then one for sin. One of those birds would be used for a sin offering and one for a burnt offering, in that they were looking for and receiving from God atonement. That same day that they did those sacrifices, they would consecrate their head by shaving it, and they would bring a male lamb as a guilt offering. The previous time that they'd already completed in their vow, whatever they had set aside for that, would be void, and so they would start over once they were once again clean. At the conclusion of their days of their vow, when the separation time was completed, that's what Nazirite means, is a time of separation. They would bring an offering, one-year-old male lamb as a burnt offering, a one-year-old ewe lamb as a sin offering, and then one ram with no defect as a peace offering. And with it, there would be a basket with unleavened cakes and with an oil and unleavened wafers with oil, and a grain offering and a drink offering. And the priest would offer him, and then the Nazirite's head would be again shaved, and the hair would go into the fire with the offering. In addition to, it says, what else he can afford to bring as an offering. We talked from the New Testament about Paul. That's not what I meant to say next, but I said it, so there it is. Paul at one point did a vow, and so he stopped and had his hair cut on one of his missionary journeys, and there was allowance for that in the way that the rabbis and priests would implement this. They said that you could, at the conclusion of your vow, if you weren't in Jerusalem, you could have your hair cut, bring it, and then put it in the sacrifice fire at the right time when they were back where it could be done. Samson and Samuel, had lifetime Nazirite vows, and we looked at that a little bit. At the end of the chapter, God gave Moses a benediction for Aaron to use to be proclaimed over the people. And God said, as his name was invoked in this way, to bless the people, that indeed he would do that. And so that Aaron was instructed to bring that blessing to the people. And so that's the kinds of things that we did in Numbers chapter 6. I would like to go back and read the blessing. We hear it sometimes used for us today. It's a great blessing. Starts in chapter number 6. verse 24, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance to you and give you peace. And then God says, and they shall invoke my name on the sons of Israel, and then I will bless them. And certainly God blesses us as we bring him into our lives and honor him by through obedience and worship and service. So with that, let's go to Numbers chapter 7. And to begin with, I'm going to read the first 9 verses. Make sure I did that right. Yes. So, Numbers 7, verses 1 through 9. Now, on the day that Moses had finished setting up the tabernacle, he anointed it and consecrated it with all its furnishings and the altar and all its utensils. He anointed them and consecrated them also. Then the leaders of Israel, the heads of their fathers' households, made an offering. They were the leaders of the tribes. They were the ones who were over the numbered men. When they brought their offering before the Lord, 6 covered carts and 12 oxen and a cart for every 2 of the, they brought front to the Lord 6 covered carts and 12 oxen, a cart for every 2 of the leaders and an ox for each one. Then they represented them before the tabernacle. They presented them before the tabernacle. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, accept these things from them, that they may be used in the service of the tent of meeting, and you shall give them to the Levites, to each man according to his service. So Moses took the carts and the oxen and gave them to the Levites. 2 carts and 4 oxen he gave to the sons of Gershon according to their service, and 4 carts and 8 oxen he gave to the sons of Merari according to their service under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. But he did not give any to the sons of Kohath, because theirs was the service of the holy objects, which they carried on their shoulders. Yeah, so, these events occurred on the day that Moses finished setting up the tabernacle and anointed it and all the furnishings and all the utensils. So, when did he do that? Go to Exodus 40, chapter 17, chapter 40, verse 17 for a moment. Exodus 40, verse 17. And this is the time that in Exodus they talk about doing this. Chapter 40, verse 17 of Exodus. Now in the first month of the second year, on the first day of the month, the tabernacle was erected. And it goes on to describing Moses erecting the tabernacle and all of the things that went along with that. So the first month of the second year, on the first day of the month. And so basically, here's Moses on that first day of the first month. How did they determine which month was the first month? Do you remember? Okay. Go over to Exodus chapter 12. And we'll put the pieces together a little bit. Exodus chapter 12. Now at this time they're still in Canaan. I'm so sorry. At this time, they're still in Exodus. I had to tell my Bible study the other day that I'll say certain words and you try to figure out what they meant were supposed to be. And sometimes I know I do that to you and I apologize. That's not my intent. In Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says this. Now the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year to you. Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, they are each one to take a lamb for themselves according to their father's households, a lamb for each household. What are they getting ready to do?
Passover.
What's that?
Passover.
Passover. Yeah, they're getting ready for the Passover, the first one in Egypt. So on the first of the month, God says to them, this is going to be the first month of the year for you going forward. And on the 10th of the month, they were to take the lamb. And then the Passover is going to take a few days. And they will be on the 14th eating the Passover to leave on the 15th. And so they are when Moses erected the tabernacle, they were 11 and a half months since they had left Egypt. Because they left Egypt in the middle of the month, got their instructions about how to do that on the first of the month, And now we're on the first day of the month following that first month. So they have been there. I'm sorry. This is the first day of the first. Let me go back to Numbers. And let me say number 7 again. On the day that Moses finished setting up, I have to go back to Exodus 40 for that. I had my finger in there. I knew I was going back to it, and then I forgot. Exodus 40, which is what we just read, and I'm going back to those verses we read. On the first day of the first month, you shall set up the tabernacle, the tent of the meeting. It was on the first day of the first month. A year earlier, they'd received their instructions, and then they were to leave some days later. So we're 11 and a half months after having left Egypt, that Moses erected the tabernacle for the first time and did all the consecration and all the things. And we read about that in great detail of what the instructions were when we looked at Exodus. Now, at that time, when we look down at verse 2, the leaders of Israel, the heads of the households, made an offering. So who are these leaders? Do you remember? That wasn't quite as far back. Who are the leaders of the tribes, the heads of the various families? Go back over to Numbers chapter 1. In Numbers chapter 1, if we look at verses 2 through 4, we can remind ourselves of what was going on there. And this is... just before this, Moses is told in verse 2, take a census of all the congregation of the sons of Israel by their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of names, every male head by head from 20 years old and upward, who is ever is able to go out to war in Israel. You and Aaron shall number them by armies. With you, moreover, there shall be a man of each tribe, each one head of his father's household. These then are the names of the men who shall stand with you: Reuben, Eliezer, the son of Shedeur, of Simeon, Shemuel, the son of, of Judah. So God goes down through there and announces who the heads of these households are, these families, the sons of Jacob. And of course, there's some differences done because the Levites aren't in there, but the two sons of Joseph are. And so when they get all done, here are these men that are to be assisting Moses and Aaron in taking the census. These now are the heads of those tribes. Well, it's the same folk that we're talking about over here in verse 2 that are listed, in verse 3, that are listed as having brought gifts on this day. They are the leaders. And what did they bring? There's 12 of them, obviously, because there's 12 of these leaders in addition to the Levites, who are not one of the group because they have been set aside. And what did they bring? Well, for each two tribes, they brought a cart. And the leaders did, and each leader brought one oxen. So when they get done, we've got 6 covered carts and 12 oxen that collectively these leaders brought as an offering to be presented to God through Moses. And the Lord speaks to Moses in verse 4 and says, accept the offering. This offering is to be used in service to the tabernacle. It's clearly a part of God's plan. He says, give them to the Levites according to their responsibilities of service. And so we see how that's done in verses 6 through 9. Moses gave 2 carts and 4 oxen, so you've got 2 oxen to pull each cart, to the sons of Gershon. Now, what were the responsibilities of the sons of Gershon? Gershon is one of the second generations under Levi, one of Levi's sons, and it travels on down through their heritage. And their job is the tabernacle, the tent, the fabric portions primarily. And so they receive a covered cart and 2 oxen to help them transport the tabernacle when they would make a move. And then also the other four carts and eight oxen were given to Merari's sons. Ithamar, one of Aaron's sons, was their supervisor, so to speak. He was the overseer, the director, and they were responsible for the structural framework of the tabernacle. So they would be carrying all of the woodwork and the silver bases and all of those things in order to set it up. So they had quite a bit to carry. Now, why didn't Kohath get any carts or oxen? What was their job?
The holy things which were carried.
The holy things which... That's right. They were to carry them, not to put them on a cart, which David forgot later on or didn't recognize it. And their poles, and now we know from these words, because they were to be carried on their shoulders. And so that was the intent. So Kohath's family needed none of this. So here is the first part of the offering that these 12 tribal leaders bring to Moses. Any questions or comments so far? Let's go over then and read verses 10 through 17. Then the leaders offered the dedication offering for the altar when it was anointed. So the leaders offered their offering before the altar. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Let them present their offering, one leader each day, for the dedication of the altar. Now the one who presented his offering on the first day was Nashon, the son of Amminadab, of the tribe of Judah, and his offering was one silver dish, whose weight was 130 shekels, one silver bowl of 70 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, both of them full of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, one gold pan of 10 shekels full of incense, one bull, one ram, one male lamb, 1 year old, for a burnt offering, one male goat for a sin offering, and for the sacrifices of peace offerings, two oxen, five rams, five male goats, five male lambs, 1 year old. This was the offering of Nashon, the son of Amminadab." And so we see that each of these leaders are going to bring an offering for the consecration of the altar. What's the altar used for? Remember the altar in the tabernacle? Well, it is where they would make their animal sacrifices, as well as grain offerings and other kinds of offerings that might be burnt with fire. The worship centers around this altar, doesn't it? What would the men from Abraham and his descendants before this time, but as they're traveling around in the Promised Land, what did they do at various times to worship God? When it was time to stop and worship, what did they do? They built an altar. The altar was central to worship. And so these leaders, when the altar is consecrated, they're bringing an offering at the dedication, at the consecration of this altar. Now, there are 12 of them, and we just saw what happened on the first day when Nashon brought his. And if we went and looked it up, Nashon was the one who was leading the tribe of Judah. But originally, we get some instructions from God about this, don't we? Here are these men ready to, as leaders of these tribes, bring an offering at the consecration of the altar. What does God say to Moses about the offerings they're to bring? Can you see that up there? Probably about verse 10 or 11. I think it's 11. What did God say to Moses about these offerings?
Present your offerings one later each day for the dedication.
Yeah, accept them, Moses, but let's do this one each day. And so the first to go was Nashon from the tribe of Judah. Now, I have elected not to read through all of the verses surrounding these gifts, because every leader brought the same thing. And so we could read it 12 times, but let's look at what Nashon brought first of all with a little bit of detail. The first thing is that he brought a silver dish, and it said that it was 130 shekels in weight according to the measure of the shekel of the temple. And best we can tell from historical research, a shekel would have been about 3.1 ounces, as 16 ounces make a pound, right? So if you do the math on that, that's going to come out to about 40 ounces or about 2.5 pounds worth of silver in this dish. How big was it? How thick was it? We don't know. We just know that would have been the general amount of silver that was used. And then there was a silver bowl of 70 shekels, which would be about 1 1/3 pounds, where the first dish was 2.5 pounds. So between the two, you're getting very close to 4 pounds of silver to make up those two. But they weren't just the silver in them. They were filled with fine flour and oil as a grain offering. So they're bringing materials for an offering. He also brought one gold pan that was about 10 shekels, or about a little over 3 ounces of gold to make that pan. And it was full of incense, also something that was used in the worship of God and was used in God's presence. And then for burnt offering, he brings one bull, one ram, and one male year-old lamb. In addition, he brings one male goat for a sin offering. So the burnt offering is primarily worship. The sin offering is for cleansing from sin. And then in addition, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 male goats, and 5 1-year-old lambs. And all of these were brought for a peace offering. Now, the peace offering typically was not fully consumed. Portions of it would be, but the bulk of this peace offering, a significant portion of it might be a better way of saying it, was retained for a feast of peace that was to signify the peace between God and those making the offering, as well as peace among themselves. And so that's what he brought. And each of the other 11 tribes present the same thing. And so that leads us to some conclusionary statements down at toward the end of chapter 7. So we're going to turn down to verse 84 and read the conclusionary comments about the gifts that they bring. So in 84, it says this: "This was the dedication offering for the altar from the leaders of Israel when it was anointed. 12 silver dishes, 12 silver bowls, 12 gold pans, each silver dish weighing 130 shekels, and each bowl 70, and all the silver of the utensils was 2,400 shekels, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. The 12 gold pans full of incense weighing 10 shekels apiece, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. All the gold of the pans then was 120 shekels. All of the oxen for the burnt offering, 12 bulls, all the rams were 12, the male lambs 1 year old with their grain offering, 12, and the male goats for a sin offering, 12, and all the oxen for the sacrifice of peace offerings was 24 bulls, the rams 60, the male goats 60, the male lambs 1 year old 60. This was the dedication offering for the altar after it was anointed. Now, and I'll read 89 as well now. When Moses went to the tent of meeting to speak with him, he heard the voice speaking to him from above the mercy seat that was on the Ark of the Testimony from between the two cherubim as he spoke to him." So we get a conclusionary accounting of the silver dishes and the grain and the incense and the animals for the burnt offering, the animals for the sin offering, and the animals for the peace offering. And it's quite a number. just to give you a little bit of a total on the metals, the silver in the dishes would have been about 46.5 pounds for both the dishes and the bowls, and about 2 1/3 pounds of gold for the gold pans. And so now we have all of this offering that was there for the dedication after the anointment of the altar that was anointed during the process of Moses anointing all of the utensils of the tabernacle. Now, one of the things that we're not told is, so clearly these are items to be sacrificed and used in worship, and items to be part of the cleansing of the people and the dedication of the people in following God, the peace with between God and the people through the offerings that were brought. And so all of these things are to be used clearly for that purpose, including the grain offering and the burning of the incense. What we're not given is a lot of detail here about what how this offering was used as a part of making this dedication and their and what went along with that. So we don't have those details. Did they each day do sacrifices, or did they wait until they were all gathered and brought together, and then the sacrifices were done after all 12 of the gifts were made? So we're a little left with some vagueness there on how was all of this handled. But here were the people bringing these items for the purpose of worship to God at the consecration and sanctification of the altar. Questions or comments so far? Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're assuming this was written by Moses, and not sure what sort of material he was writing it on, but regardless of what it was probably in short supply, and it was probably very valuable and time-consuming. Why did he write the exact same thing 12 times? Why didn't he just say this was given by each 12 and blah, blah, blah?
Now you're asking me to get into Moses' head a little bit. But I do think there's something to emphasize here, and I want to do that, and we can just stop and do that right now. We've got a few other things I want to talk about, but we can backtrack and pick those up. Yes, sir, Dave.
Yeah, I want to address that a little bit. Paul wrote to Timothy, all scripture God breathed.
Mm-hmm.
He's referring to the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote that 12 times under the instruction and authority of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit instructed him to do that.
That's right. And
that's the answer.
Well, and that is the answer. And I want to go to another piece of what the Holy Spirit gave us much later in time. But I think it relates very directly to why it was something God emphasized by writing it for each one of those. I want to go to Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. These are going to be very familiar words to you. Matthew chapter 6, 19 through 21. Back up a page. This is Jesus, and it's in his long period of Sermon on the Mount. In that region of the scriptures, and we're going to start with verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And I think what we're seeing here is a continuing action, set of actions in a long line of actions that showed following their rebellion on Mount Sinai, the people did for this period of time, I think, greatly treasure and have their heart in worshiping God. And I think it shows up here. It began to show up shortly after that period of time of rebellion when Moses comes down off the mountain and they get started building the tabernacle. Where, what was the source of the supplies to build the tabernacle?
People's jewelry and stuff.
The people brought it. Their gold, they spun the materials out of fine linen or had them, but they provided all of that. What did the workers say at some point while they're building the tabernacle? We're running short? No, stop. Our total job's going to turn out to be warehousing excess materials. We've got everything we need. Let's continue. So the people were very engaged in providing for the building of the tabernacle and doing the work under the leadership of the man that God had made head of it and had gifted so strongly to do it, whose name escapes me right at the moment. But they were involved. This was something they were greatly a part of. And then we see Moses go through a dedication with them and a consecration with them of the tabernacle. And there were a lot of steps involved in that, and they were there and a big part of it. At the point at which the center of worship is dedicated, I want to say consecrated is a better word, the altar itself, these tribal leaders are there, I think more than just on their own, but representing their tribes. And it's clear that maybe they worked together on what was the best thing to bring, but each one of them is bringing from their tribe this gift for worship. I think this is very much tied in with their hearts are in this. They're a part of it. There was nothing Moses had to be told by God. I don't mean that he was unwilling to accept the sacrifice, but it was not something that was commanded by God and given through Moses, hey, each of you bring this. They themselves, out of their hearts, were bringing of their worldly goods that could be used to worship God in the way that God had commanded for the various sacrifices, for the peace offering, and so on. And I think there's a real lesson in that for us as well. Which moves first, the treasure or the heart? Sometimes. I'm going to say to you that until you begin investing in ministry of all that you are, including your treasure and the things you really treasure, and use them for ministry, it's hard for the heart to be there. And it's hard to invest until the heart's there. And I'm going to say they go together in the main, but one may lead more than another for individual people. But once you start investing in and becoming aligned with that and making that a part of who you are, I'm a part of this ministry, and I put my funds there, I put my energies there, I put who I am there, you're not as there as you could be in alignment with the words of what Jesus said in Matthew 6. Don't store up treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where corruption doesn't occur. And that's a valuable part of doing it, is it won't be corrupted. Right now, I imagine some of you are thinking about where you've got your retirement money or whatever. Is that really a good, safe place? Things are a little bit less stable maybe than they have been at other times. You don't have to worry about that in your heavenly investment. It doesn't corrupt. It will be there. But that's not where, that is of great value for you to invest in heaven in that way. But Jesus' conclusionary statement is the pinnacle. Where you put your treasure is also where your heart will be. If you withhold your treasure, you're withholding your heart. No other way to say it. And if you're not withholding your treasure, your heart is what's driving you there. Put your heart in there, put your treasure, and make it all go. And I think these people are illustrating that. And why would you say it 12 times then? Because anything you say more than once in the scriptures is emphasized. The other thing is, God made it clear through the words that he had Moses write down that every one of these tribes is in on it. It isn't that somehow these 12 men got together and went out and gathered this total amount of stuff and gave it as a group. No, their tribes, they worked within their tribes. Was it all out of their own personal wealth for these 12 men or out of wealth of the tribes? I don't know. It doesn't say. But you have each one of these tribes providing gifts, offerings for the worship of God in this established tabernacle on this newly consecrated altar, the center of worship. Does that make sense? Yes.
How many tribes were traveling at the time?
What's that?
How many separate tribes were traveling with Moses?
Well, it depends on how you want to define tribes, but they're all there.
Or family.
Yeah, I mean, there's 12. There's 12 tribes.
Okay.
But I'm also going to say that we've gone through a bit of an alteration in that the tribe of Levi is not in these gifting people. So you take that out of the original 12, there's 11. But one of those, according to the prophecy of Jacob, has been divided in two, and that's Joseph.
So there was 12 copies.
12 copies. 12, yeah, there were 12 sets of these things brought and given. Yes. Yes.
He holds us all that same standard, that same level of commitment in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, oh, you can only give 10% of your heart and you can give 100% of your heart. He wants all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say that. I'm not sure how intentional it was.
Greater than this tribe.
Yeah. Well, I do think part of the 12 separate days was to give each of those gifts the attention that would show that the tribe was in on it, behind it, that it was, in that sense, maybe you could go to the equality of it. But I do think that it was very intentional, that it was very visible that every tribe did it. Good comments. Other comments? So in this passage, we see the leaders are recorded to have made two separate sets of offerings. One as a group, they came and gave the 6 carts and 12 oxen. And to me, that's a testimony, and you might say that the similarity or the exact duplication of the gifts of the 12 tribes fits this as well. I think that was God at work in their hearts. Why did they choose to bring 6 carts and 12 oxen? And I think God clearly had in mind, because when the gift came, he says, okay, accept that, Moses, and here's how you're going to pass it back to the Levites. Do it according to the need of the people that have the work to do. God was making available to them the tools they needed to be able to move this tabernacle around as this nomadic society would be until they populated the promised land. And God knew that was some time away yet, because he knew what was coming in their rebellion yet to happen as they moved toward the promised land. But the second sacrifice came at the moment of the consecration of the tools of worship. These tribes, once again, I think by God's direction, but out of their hearts, I believe, they brought the worship sacrifices that were needed in order to move it forward. Any questions or comments so far? Then I'm going to go to the last verse here of the chapter. Okay, so when after these gifts are brought in verse 89, when Moses went to the tent of meeting to speak with him, he heard the voice speaking to him from above the mercy seat that was on the Ark of the Testimony from between the two cherubim, so he spoke to him. And so there's some pronouns in here that you'd have to take a minute and get straight. So Moses went into the tent of meeting to speak with him. Him who?
God,
yes. And Moses heard the voice speaking to him from above the mercy seat. Isn't that where God said he would be? On the Ark of the Testimony from between the two cherubim. So he spoke to him. So God spoke to Moses. And so we see at the at the end of all of this, here is Moses interacting directly with God, speaking back and forth in the Holy of Holies next to the Ark of the Covenant, where God's voice is clearly coming from the area where God said he would be dwelling in the Holy of Holies. Questions, comments? Okay.
Is the only one that can hear God's voice?
Well, so when are we talking about? At this moment, I think probably so. Now, I say can hear God's voice, I think so primarily because they're both in the room together. Clearly, in other situations, if we go clear back to their coming to Mount Sinai, God spoke to Moses within the hearing of the people. The people had a very strong reaction to that. Don't do that again. Moses, you go talk to God and then tell us and we'll do what he says. Not so true, but that's what they promised. And so many times it worked that way from then going forward. It was primarily between Moses and God. Could they hear? It isn't told to us. One thing that they were experiencing while Moses is on the mountain is the presence of God was seen in smoke and fire and thunder and earthquake type experiences. I don't know that there were what it all really felt like, but that's how it's described for us. While they're there, it's just this tremendously scary for the people, impressive presence of God on the mountain. And so did they hear? Could they overhear? Could they tell God was speaking, even if they didn't get the words? I really can't say I know, but depended on the time and the circumstance. Yes?
I have a question.
Okay.
In that last part, you said the cherub.
Uh-huh. Not in this case, not at all. This is what God asked them to make to signify where his presence would be. And the cherubs align with what you would see over in Ezekiel. They align with angels. And so this is what God commanded them to build. So they're not out there saying, we want to build something to worship. They are there following the very clear, direct commands of God, not only to make them, but exactly how to make them, what to make them out of, where to place them. And this mercy seat God commands to be built, it's built as a separate lid, if you will, or a part of the lid, or it went on the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. And so there's numerous furniture things that God very specifically directed to be built for use in the tabernacle, and he gave very clear instructions on how they were to be built.
Okay.
So that was just being obedient to God. And if you want, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, cherubs are associated with the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
So you look in Scripture, cherubs are always present in heaven, in the throne room.
Mm-hmm.
Represented as winged beings. They're constantly flying around the throne of God. So their presence here on the ark indicates that God is present. They're associated with his presence.
Mm-hmm.
They're always in his presence.
Yeah.
Cherubs are.
Yeah,
so
and
it would be natural
yeah.
that if God is present there, that there would be cherubs there.
Yeah. And of course, when we look, you know, I referenced Ezekiel, you could reference items in the New Testament as well, particularly in the book of the Revelation. But they're definitely moving creatures and active creatures and praising creatures. Here, they're a representation of that, so they're not the actual cherubs, but they certainly represent the cherubs that are there with God, yes. Well, and what people worship is, I mean, just like anything proper, people can choose to worship things in place of God, from their prosperity, from nationalism, a particular document. People worshiped all kinds of things and held it up too high, including at times the Ark of the Covenant, in the sense that they saw the power in the Ark, sometimes not in the power of God. And so when they didn't obey God but still took the Ark of Covenant into the battle, things didn't go so well. So it still falls upon the people to keep their frame of worship in the right place. But we get a good example of the difference in making a graven image of what they did when they made the golden calf there on at Mount Sinai. I mean, that certainly was not a command of God. Aaron tried to make it sound like something strange happened because I threw this gold in and out came a calf. Well, I'm not very convinced of that, because it says very clearly he used a graving tool to help make that calf. So, yeah, there's a big difference there. Yes, sir.
One of them is Uriel, named according to them.
Yeah, and I don't know where that may or may not be somewhere in Scripture. I don't know, but yeah. Anything else? Well, I'm faced with a dilemma, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to handle the dilemma. Chapter 8. No, I'm not. We're going to do a little bit out of chapter 8. Let's turn over to chapter 8, verses 1-4, and then when we start into verse 5, we're going to not continue with verse 5 and the following. Verse 5 and following, just to tell you what's coming, and I'm going to say it very carefully with these words, it is the cleansing of the Levites as a group, which is a little separate than the dedication or consecration of Aaron and his sons. But we'll get there next time. This time, let's look at chapter 8, verses 1-4. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and say to him, when you mount the lamps, the seven lamps will give light in front of the lampstand. Aaron therefore did so. He mounted its lamps at the front of the lampstand, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Now this was the workmanship of the lampstand, hammered work of gold. From its base to its flowers, it was hammered work, according to the pattern which the Lord had shown Moses. So he made the lampstand." And so here is the instructions. They're continuing with the consecration. We've got the lampstand there. And if you remember back when we studied it, it's got a lot of gold in it. This is heavy. It's fairly large. In today's world, it would be worth millions of dollars just based on its weight of gold. But the Lord spoke to Moses, telling Aaron, when you mount the lamps on the lampstand, so they've got the lamps that need to be mounted, the lamps will give light in front of the lampstand, which they're right across from the showbread. But that's what its role in the tabernacle was to provide light for the part of the room that the lampstand faced. And so Aaron did put those lamps on there, and it was done just as the Lord had commanded, and we get another testimony to the high quality of work that was done in building that lampstand, in that it was hammered gold. Well, it was similar to a menorah, different. I have to look because I get them confused. Different number. Menorah has a different number of lamps because it's based on something different than what you see here. Do you remember? It's 7 lamps on this. 1 in the center and 3 pairs come out. And I'd have to go back and look at the menorah. It was based on an event that the Jews experienced. I'm not remembering it all. But the menorah has... Anybody know? Menorah has how many?
8.
8? Okay. I don't know, don't remember right now. We talked about it when we went over the construction. But this has 3 pairs of arms coming out, and so it would have 7 lamps. Now, they were oil lamps, not candles. And because there was special oil for the lamp that had to be made. And so it would be assembled in accordance with the instructions and would be set up there. All right. So I'm not going to start on with those next verses, but Moses gives the instructions to Aaron, and Aaron actually puts it together. I think the biggest lesson for today is really looking at how these people as a nation got into their worship by not only providing the materials that were needed to build the tabernacle, which took some time, but they really, their hearts were in it as they brought the gifts and the offerings so that proper worship to God could take place. All right, well, I'll see you next time.